Peace be with you. Friends, we come to this wonderful feast, the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of the Holy Spirit, one of the most important in the life of the church, easily as important as Christmas, as Easter, this great Feast of the Spirit. There are, you know, so many beautiful images and ideas associated with the Holy Spirit. Wind, fire, speech in foreign tongues, the love between the Father and the Son, the breath of Jesus breathed on His disciples. All these are attempts to say something about this inexhaustible mystery of the divine Spirit. What I want to do today, though, is to focus on a particular image and idea that comes out of the high priestly discourse of Jesus, which is part of which is our gospel for today. The Holy Spirit is referred to as the Spirit of Truth. Here's what Jesus says. I have much more to tell you, but you cannot bear it now. But when He comes, the Spirit of Truth will guide you to all truth. An extraordinary line from this absolutely extraordinary speech of Jesus. I've got much more to tell you, but you can't take it in right now. But the Spirit of Truth, the Holy Spirit, when He comes, He'll guide you to all truth. Now, it might strike us, first of all, as kind of puzzling, because didn't Jesus say about Himself, I am the way, the truth, and the life? You know, after all, He's the Logos of the Father. He's the very reason by which God made the world. He became flesh and dwelt among us, and St. John tells us He was, quote, full of grace and truth. So what gives here? Is Jesus the truth or the Holy Spirit the truth? Well, the solution to that problem is this. The Holy Spirit is none other than the Spirit of Jesus. The Holy Spirit doesn't exist so much apart from Jesus because He is the love breathed back and forth between the Father and the Son. See, don't think of the Holy Spirit as another being apart from the Father and the Son. Rather, wherever the Spirit is, so are the Father and the Son. Wherever the Father and Son are, there is the Spirit, because the Spirit is the love that obtains between the Father and the Son. And so Jesus is the truth, quite right. And the Spirit is the Spirit of Truth because He's the Spirit of Jesus. And now I think in light of that, we can begin to understand what Jesus meant when He spoke of the Spirit leading the disciples into all truth. Though Jesus is the divine truth, and though He appeared among us, listen now, the fullness of His truth would emerge and be understood only in time and only through the church. He's the truth. That's right. Jesus is the fullness of God's truth. But we won't get the fullness of His truth all at once. But we will get it only by being led into it by the Spirit in time and through the church. Think for a second of a parent's love in relation to his or her child. Though the parent's love is utterly present to the baby from the moment of his conception, from the moment of his birth, the child will be able to take in that love, to appreciate it, to understand it only over the course of a lifetime. Right? I mean, so the mother is manifesting her full love for the child when the child is a month old, but the baby can barely take in that love. One of the wonders of growing up is just that steady awakening to who one's parents are as more and more aspects of their love emerge. And that's true, you know, as a kid gets older, as you get older, as you move through life, and you sense more and more how much your parents love you. Different profiles and aspects of that love begin to emerge. In fact, you know, even if a parent wanted to show the depth of his love to his little child, he couldn't. precisely because the child couldn't take it in. The child's mind and range of experience and emotional capacity simply would not be sufficiently developed to comprehend what his mother or father had done for him. You know who else knows this principle really well? I think a good teacher. A first grade teacher couldn't begin to share with her charges everything that she knows. So she feeds her students carefully, small bits at a time. And only in the course of many years might a child gradually be ready for more advanced learning. Think of a teacher saying with utter complacency to a class of freshman physics students, "I have much more to tell you, but you can't bear it now." I mean, that would make perfect sense. The teacher with a doctorate in physics has much more to tell them, but the students in freshman class couldn't possibly take it in. Another image. Many married couples testify that each spouse remains to the other, even after many years of marriage, a kind of treasure which continues to surprise. It's true, isn't it? You think, oh, after 50 years, don't these people know each other through and through? But no, in fact, the more you get to know another person, the more mysterious that person often becomes. The more you take in of their life and their love and their goodness, in some ways, the more you begin to sense. And so, the truth of Jesus emerges only gradually, and in the unfolding of the history and life of his body, the church. See, this principle is a very important Catholic principle. The truth of Jesus is fully there when he's walking the hills of Galilee and he's in the presence of his disciples. It's there, but they couldn't possibly take it in. "Oh, I've got much more to tell you, but you can't bear it right now. What you need is the Holy Spirit, who will gradually, in the course of time, and in the life of the church, lead you into full truth." You know, I spent much of my professional life teaching theology. One thing that any teacher of theology notices is that theological truth is not like a football that's simply handed on in its sameness and entirety from person to person across the ages, as though this great deposit of truth was simply given by Jesus to the first disciples, who then passed it on like a football down through the ages. Well, no, it's not like that. Rather, it's more like a plant or a tree that grows from a small seed and develops over time and across space. Think of the great theological tradition, beginning with figures like Peter and Paul and James and John and the biblical authors. But then, as the faith is planted in various parts of the world, as it's thought about, analyzed, judged, passed from person to person, how it unfolds, it develops, it grows, the church coming to ever richer understanding of itself. Or it's more like a river that commences as a small stream or a tiny trickle, but then grows and spreads out and deepens and broadens over time and space. Think of the contrast between the source of the Mississippi, way up in Minnesota — they say you can jump across it, it's so small — and the mouth of the Mississippi down in New Orleans. It's like a great lake, you know, mighty ships sail in it. So it goes with the theological tradition. The truth of Jesus is being taken in gradually, over time, over space, guided by the work of the Holy Spirit. That's why one of my great heroes, John Henry Newman, the most important theologian of the 19th century, spoke about the development of doctrine. What he meant was the unfolding of the church's understanding of God, of Jesus, of the sacraments, of sin and salvation, everything else. It's altogether reasonable, Newman said, that we two millennia after the time of Jesus might understand certain theological truths more clearly than the first generation of believers. Sure, we might have a clearer grasp because the Holy Spirit has been guiding the church into the fullness of truth. Think, too, of the lives of the saints. What is Christian holiness? What does it mean to imitate Jesus? Well, you know, listen, there can't be one life that says it all. One life that just sums it up entirely. Rather, the meaning of holiness unfolds. It manifests itself gradually over time and space in the myriad lives of the saints. To quote Newman again, the content of a real idea is equivalent to the sum total of its possible aspects. That's a very typical Newman line. It's very insightful, very telling. Think of holiness as an infinitely faceted diamond. Only when that diamond is turned round and round, allowing the light to catch each of its aspects one by one, could we possibly say that we understand it in its fullness. What is that diamond? Well, you just show me one aspect of it, the light hitting it one way. Well, I'm catching one dimension. To catch the whole of the diamond, well, you've got to turn it around, toss it up in the air, let the light catch it in different ways. Well, so it goes with the million ways that Christ's light is reflected in the lives of the saints. What does it mean to be Christ-like? Well, there's St. Paul. Yep. And there's St. Peter. And there's St. John. And there's Justin Martyr. And there's Irenaeus. And there's John Chrysostom. And there's Augustine. And there's Bonaventure. And there's Thomas Aquinas. And there's John Henry Newman, and there's Thérèse of Lisieux, and there's Edith Stein, and there's Mother Teresa, and the list goes on and on. What's happening there? The Holy Spirit is guiding us into the fullness of truth. We can't take in the fullness of what Jesus' holiness means all at once, but only now in the course of time, only through the life of the church, can we see holiness in its fullness. Well, see, this unfolding of the truth of Jesus, friends, that's the work of the Holy Spirit, and that's why we need the church. The church is not just a, as I've said many times, not just a collectivity of like-minded people. There's a we who admire Jesus get together because it's more helpful. No, it's much richer than that. The church is animated by the Holy Spirit, and its purpose is to bring out more and more the fullness of the truth of Jesus. I think on this Feast of Pentecost, it's very good for us to get a sense of what the church is and what the church witnesses to the world, drawing us into the fullness of Jesus Christ. And God bless you.